Hi, and welcome to Read It For Me. We hope you enjoy this audio download of this week's Read It For Me episode. To watch our animated video summary and access your other learning tools, log into your account at www.readitfor.me. Thanks again, and here comes this week's episode. According to the editors of Flux, in the last few years, the landscape in which firms interact with customers is in a state of flux. Concurrently, the cost of collecting, storing, and analyzing customer data is dropping, and deep dive segmentation is now easier than ever. Consequently, we need tools and techniques to address this flux. This book is a collection of essays, studies, and manifestos brought together by the editors of the Rotman School of Management in Toronto. Join us for the next 10 minutes as we summarize some of our favorite parts. Losing Control and Loving It by David Dunn. Most of us will be aware of the classical approaches to marketing, the three C's, customer, competition, and company, STP, segmentation, targeting, and positioning, the four P's, product, price, promotion, and place. Web 2.0 has turned much of this on its head. Take segmentation. As consumers have become more widely experienced and knowledgeable, the task of segmentation has become more challenging. With the power of social networking and group sharing, the consumer is not just an independent entity to be served, but also an influencer of others. Consumers no longer belong to a single demographic set, but to multiple tribes driven and determined by their interests, their peers, and their lives both on and offline. Therefore, when a marketer takes a product forward, they need to think beyond demographic influences and consider other factors such as a product's innovative and viral capacity and the inclination of consumers to blog or tweet about it. This is not just pertinent to one tribe. It's equally critical to be aware of how this tribe may influence another and vice versa. Positioning is equally affected. In the classic model, positioning is what you do in the mind of the prospect. Now, however, the advertiser is no longer the driver. Positioning is now more a hope that the end result is what is desired and a realization that the conversation between consumer and advertiser may lead anywhere, not just where the advertiser wants. Mass marketing is dead. Long live me marketing. The marketing of today is all about the creation of meaning for the individual, a symbolic meaning associated with the product. In the world of Web 2.0, brands have become community property, influenced from any direction by consumers, non-consumers, competitors, employees, distributors, and more. Dunn gives us three pieces of advice. Number one, lose the illusion of control. Lead the discussion, but don't control it. Number two, monitor your product's online presence. Number three, engage your customers transparently, rapidly, and honestly. Relate to them as people, not targets. Memory, Persuasion, and Decision-Making by Andrew A. Mitchell. When we think of a brand, we think not only of the brand itself, but all of the information linked to it. When we used it last, was it good or bad? Is it associated with pleasure points or pain points? Does it align with other desirable or influential objects? For example, the feeling of fear you experience when you see a wolf show its teeth invokes negative associations, so any product with such alignment can trigger an equal reaction. Why else are kittens used to promote softness and gentleness? Such associations may also be formed from an advertisement. If a consumer likes an advertisement, they're likely to then associate the good feelings to the product as well. When exposed to an advertisement, a consumer can react actively or passively. If they take an active role, they will consciously process the information provided and elaborate on it by extending their own thoughts, either agreeing or disagreeing with what is suggested. If they agree, this additional information will eternally be associated with the product. If they disagree, then no added benefit is made. If the consumer takes a passive role, some information from the advertisement may become associated, but more at a subliminal level. Again, kittens and softness align. At any given point in time, the information stored in a consumer's memory will vary as to its accessibility. Some information is accessible because we're frequently exposed to it. The same thing happens when we're exposed to an advertisement. If we're able to immediately identify the brand, all associated information is accessed. However, If a different brand is identified, all positivity from the advertisement becomes associated with the second, incorrect brand. This is amplified by the consumer's willingness to know more about the product. If they have an appetite for knowledge, all positivity is enhanced. If they have less of an interest, then passing on the information is more difficult. In other words, the memorability of an advertisement is not a guarantee of its persuasiveness. Marketing Management When Facing Forward-Looking Consumers by Andrew T. Chang. As information technology improves and becomes more accessible, it's much easier for consumers to gather information and spend time thinking about how they'll benefit from a product. These are forward-looking consumers. When we see a 2-for-1 offer in a store for something we use regularly, it's often the case that we'll stock up for the future. We are looking forward. When a new product enters the market, it takes a while before it becomes established. One of the reasons is that consumers are uncertain of its quality. Due to risk aversion, they may not want to try it out. This is when free or discounted samples can be introduced. But how many and to who? The answer depends on what consumers think about the value of experimentation. If they are forward-looking, they will have personal incentives to experiment with a new product. If the product is exciting and of high value, then they can enjoy greater benefits, and like Gladwell's mavens from The Tipping Point, they can pass the information on to others. If it fails to meet the mark, then only little has been lost. No loss of status. If most consumers are reluctant to experiment, we may want to design our advertising in a way that informs the consumer of the facts they would have ascertained had they taken the risk. On the other hand, if they're experimenters, then developing a differentiated brand is more beneficial. Just imagine The Role of Visualization in New Product Evaluation by Min Zhao. With new product failures as high as 80%, it's important to have our eyes and ears open for ways to reduce the risk of failure. The reluctance to accept new products can be attributed to the learning costs associated with new product adoption and consumers' underestimation of the value it brings. This is the what's in it for me factor. A key method employed with success is to structure marketing campaigns that help the consumer learn about the benefits and features through visualization. For example, without actually using the product, consumers can be guided to mentally experience the new product, say a tablet PC, and to visualize where it can add value to their daily activities. In doing so, benefits can become intrinsically associated with the product, leading to a greater desirability of the product. If this is done well, even product release delays can have less of an impact as the desirability grows with lack of access. The successful release of each iteration of the iPhone is a testament to this belief. When people consider events in the future, they're more likely to be focused on overall benefits and neglect process-related challenges. Therefore, if our product is an operational benefit, it's worth asking the consumer to visualize how the product would fit into their daily life, thereby reducing any potential gap between expectation and reality at launch. Asking people to visualize process simulation is most effective when evaluating familiar products, because we already have a benchmark comparator. The opposite is true for novel products, as asking consumers to evaluate how they would use an unfamiliar product will tend to have them focus on the associated learning curve and challenges to adoption. People tend to give more weight to negative information, and consequently, bringing challenges to their attention is unproductive. People are also more likely to identify benefits of visualization when their personal thoughts are sought. We're always more likely to think of the benefits to ourselves and the negative impact on others. Therefore, any visualization exercise needs to be internalized. Similarly, any visualization premise should be forward-looking, not backwards. For example, if we ask the business executive to visualize how they may have benefited from the use of an iPad on their last international trip, they may identify some benefit, but are more likely to know that they did all right with what they had, and this new tech is not really necessary. Because people think of past events in a more detailed way and future events more abstractly, the purpose of visualization exercises need to be well thought out to confirm expectation rather than unstructured and visceral. How can different types of visualization be employed in marketing practice? Through interactions with salesmen, in TV commercials, in printed advertisements, or even through product descriptions and product packaging. Whatever channel, visualization needs to be made easy because the more difficult, the more negative the associations will be. So there you have it, just a few of the many excellent approaches in flux. To discover more, go buy the book.